Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, my friends. This is Mickey Desai, your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm very lucky to have on the phone today Dr. Teresa Ricky Keeley, who is a preeminent expert on nonprofit leadership. She has worked both in academia and in the nonprofit sector as a champion of rights for underserved communities and has become a well-known expert in her field. She has over 30 years of experience in the nonprofit sector as an academic and a practitioner from volunteer to executive level. You've done everything, haven't you?
I have done quite a bit. Everything from the volunteer to the board to teaching in the classroom and accompanying my colleagues on this nonprofit journey. And I am just delighted to be here this morning, Mickey.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And what draws you to this kind of work?
Well, I think it's really important to have a purpose in life, and the nonprofit sector just sets it up. It just makes your mission really relevant, and I was really attracted to helping people. So I got bit by that bug very early. I was going to college for a psychology degree, and my first summer after high school, I decided to work for a nonprofit that served people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and fell in love with it, really advocating for that sector, learning about that sector, and really starting to get my teeth in leadership. It came to me very naturally and very early in my career.
So let me ask the obvious question, even though I'm sure that many of our listeners are going to roll their eyes at this question, but what is leadership?
Oh, gosh, that's a really good question. And there are 1,000 examples out there and 1,000 definitions. I tell my students, if we could all agree on one definition and come up with one way of expressing it, we'd be millionaires, because the scholarship community has lots of different ways of defining it, as well as the practitioner community. But I look at it as a way of influencing others towards a vision that will help others. It involves motivation and involves integrity. It involves being a role model. All those things accompany the leadership definition, but that's not all. There are so many other things that we can add in there. And you can't just boil it down to a one size fits all. Right. It's kind of like beauty. You know it when you see it. Different for everybody. Different for everybody.
But I like that general summation. It's influencing people towards, how did you put it? Towards
a vision. And in our sector, I'd like to say towards a vision of mission of helping others, improve those quality of lives for people who may not be born with that privilege, whatever that is.
So how do you foster leadership in the nonprofit world? Every time I pick up a paper and read about leadership issues across the nonprofit sector, I keep seeing reports that say there's actually a shortage of good leadership, especially at the board level. So do you notice that? And then how do we go about trying to fix it?
Yeah, at the board level, I definitely see that we have a lack of good leadership. Part of it is that we don't really have the commitment. Part of it is the model itself. Boards are, you know, this methodology has been around for 60, 70 years, and it's the best thing we have, but I don't think it's going to be the end-all, be-all. We really need to find kind of a new way of governing nonprofit organizations, getting the people who want to commit to lead this organization, whatever that may be, or lead the mission, and really take a look at what that means. So they have to be committed. They have to have integrity. They have to have some good relational skills. How do you connect with donors? They need to have conceptual skills. And this is probably the things I see in boards that boards are really struggling with. They don't have a lot of conceptual skills. So what are conceptual skills? Things like strategy, things like advancing the mission, things like vision, those things that you can't just learn in a classroom. It has to be something that you develop and foster over your career. So how do you develop a strategy? And how do you do that within your organization? And boards have, like many of us, they want to get into the concrete, into the weeds. And boards can't do that. They have to have that 30,000 foot strategic level, a vision of where they're going, and help the executive team get there. So it's something that needs to develop over time. I tell my students when I'm teaching conceptual skills in my leadership classes that join a board, join a strategic board where they already have this down, and try to work that muscle, because it's not something that's easily learned in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. there's a lot to unpack there, I think, which begs the next question. Again, another philosophical question that's almost become a cliche. Can you teach leadership, or do you simply...
Gosh, I hope so. Otherwise, I'd be out of a job. So there are some traits to leadership. Traits are those things that you're born with, your personality, things like intelligence, things like being empathetic, passionate, committed, confidence, being authentic, all those things you kind of either have or you don't. You can develop some of those, but you're not going to change your intelligence greatly by taking more classes. You can increase your knowledge by doing that.
Right.
But I think there are a lot of skills that you can learn in leadership. Things like how can I network with people? That's a relational skill. Some people are more adept at that. They're those social architects out there, and they do it naturally. But there are ways that you can develop. How do you connect with people? There are ways that you can look at how you can be a leader in your field through that knowledge base, and then trying to connect with others about their ideas, finding out where the innovations are. There are ways that you can learn about strategy by focusing on how other leaders have learned about strategy. There are ways of connecting the current knowledge of today and trying to figure out, well, what do I need to do for my organization? I think leaders need to be developed. I think this needs to start at the volunteer level, through the board level, and everything in between. And part of it is knowing where you're at. Where is your strengths and weaknesses or gap areas now? Where do you need to improve? And once you have that, you can continually increase doing that. But there are hundreds and hundreds of books and seminars and classes and degrees in this. And certainly you can always improve on your leadership ability.
Sure. I mean, it does take some concerted attempt to, you know, change your own personal behaviors, I think. But much like anything else, whether it's leadership skills or even a behavioral change for, you know, decreasing anxiety, I think that doesn't the individual have to rehearse those changes? And how do you get an individual to want to rehearse those changes when they have a full-time job and, you know, other things to do, and all of a sudden they have to foster their, they have to, you know, develop their own leadership skills to help their nonprofit? I might not be asking the right question here, but
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. So there are a lot of leaders out there who don't want to foster their own leadership skills. Mm-hmm. If you do a survey of 100 executives, 90 of them, research has shown, will say they're in the top 10%. And we know that's not true. So how do you show that the emperor has no clothes? You really need to take a look at getting feedback. You really want to understand how people experience you. And the nonprofit sector, it's really clear that donors want to relate to you. Your staff need to relate to you. We have a talent pool that is not ever ending. We need to make sure that we are attracting the best and the brightest. And how the leader acts is crucial in that methodology. So we really need to understand where are our weaknesses and try to get that self-awareness. It's not easy, and it's not for the weak-hearted. Being able to say, this is what I'm strong in, and this is where I need help is really critical. I have a number of ways to do that. If somebody is just starting out at this, do some self-assessments. Do a Strength Finders. Do a Myers-Briggs. There's no wrong answers in that. It just tells you where your strengths are. Mm-hmm. If you want to develop it even more, find a mentor, not somebody in your chain of command. They have a conflict of interest. Roxanne Spillett, who used to be a great nonprofit leader, she's now retired, you know, said, you know, find a mentor that looks like you, somewhere where you want to go, and then find somebody who's really different than you. And I think that's really good advice. Have them give you advice about where you're at and what you could do better and what you're doing well at and how to continue to enhance that.
Right.
But you need to find some truth tellers out there that will give you good, honest feedback so that you know next steps. And you don't need to do it all at once. This is a journey. This is a lifetime. Nobody ever gets to be that great leader and then stops. If you've stopped learning, you've stopped growing, and you're going to start to decay.
Right. Right. And like most things, change takes time. You better not rush it.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
You really want to understand where you're at, but also develop a vision about where do you want to go? What are your own ambitions? Where do you see your field going? Do you want to stay in that field? What do you need to do to stay relative? One of the things I learned early on was that I needed to get more education. Having a bachelor's was not something that was going to make me an executive director. Mm-hmm. I needed to get a master's, and then in big cities, they require a doctorate. So you constantly need to be aware of what's coming ahead in the future and what you need to be relevant. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you'll be put aside.
Mm. Goodness. It sounds daunting, but would you say that it is daunting?
It is not daunting. I think if you want to lead in any sector, you really need to know where you stand and take one step at a time. You do not need to eat the cow all at once. Where do you want to start? What do you want to get better at? What kind of feedback do you need at this time? Just take one step at a time. Read a leadership book. Take a leadership course. Enjoy a webinar or a podcast, and try to figure out where you're at and just do one thing at a time. It doesn't have to be daunting.
I find in my own leadership stuff, because I currently chair a board of directors, and I find that I'm constantly sort of experimenting with the ways to deliver the message and to try to inspire my fellow board members to do different things. I'm not sure I'm always successful, but I guess failure is an expected part of an experiment. Do you think that this is a fair way for other leaders to go about trying to affect change, or is there a more organized way to do it?
I think we learn probably more from our failures, because they really kind of hit on our emotion more than we do our successes. It's something that we remember for a lifetime. So if you look back at your career, Mickey, you probably can say, oh, I should have done that differently. And the next time you do it, you do it differently because you learn from that. So I think failure is necessary. I think a leader who goes through life and has never failed they're not really leading. So I think learning from those failures is necessary. And if you do have good leadership in your organization, you encourage people to take a risk. And if they fail, reflect on that, go back. What were your assumptions? What could you do differently? I think right. That's a crucial part of the process. So I think organizations allowing failure is part of the process and part of leadership development.
Right. And the other thing that I try to implement is always open door for feedback. I try to keep things very casual. And this is just my personal style. I know other people have different styles and different ways of trying to collect their feedback. But I love it when another board member comes to me and says, hey, when you say it this way, I don't think it's well received as when you say it this other way. And without that, I would be lost, actually.
Yeah. And the fact that people are coming to you means that you're a safe person to talk to. So many of our leaders, just because of their position, they seem intimidating. So you need to try to figure out how to get that feedback in different ways. So having people come in might not be as easy if you're a positional leader, you're the executive director. Whereas on a board, you're almost peers. There's not any huge power dynamic there.
Right.
So you need to figure out, well, how do I get people to tell me so I know. I always like to advocate that people have at least one truth teller, somebody that they can go back to say, how did you experience me? I don't feel like I did that in the best way. Is there a better way? What would you have done if you were in my space? And for somebody to give you honest feedback without any kind of punishment for sharing that information. So if you could find somebody who is ideally not in your chain of command that can say, hey, you kind of said that in a way that might be a little off-putting.
Right.
And have that conversation. Those types of things need to be more formal. You can't just wait for people to pop in. We have a conflict-averse society in the U.S., and in many places around the world. And you really need to figure out, well, how do I get this information? And maybe it's taking somebody out for coffee and saying, I'd like to have this kind of conversation with you on a regular basis so I can get better. The purpose of this is for me to be a better leader, and I value your opinion.
Just to switch gears a little bit, you just mentioned that we're in a conflict-averse society. Mm-hmm. What does that mean exactly?
A lot of people don't want to to say it the way it is. They would rather avoid conflict than dealing with some of the wicked problems we have to deal with. So if there is a troublesome employee, they might not want to address that behavior. Or if they have a participant that isn't working out in their program, they might be a little shy about addressing it head on. And part of the leader is to have courage to actually say exactly what's going on, not in a mean way, but in a way that can be constructive to helping the organization and whoever might be affected by this conflict. So we really want to make sure that we're addressing the problems, we're being honest and authentic, and not just avoiding those issues that might be uncomfortable to us. Being a leader is about being uncomfortable. There are things that you're going to have to do every single week that it's like, oh, I don't want to do that. It might be more on the managerial side. I have to write somebody up or maybe even terminate somebody. Mm-hmm. Or it might be I'm dealing with a board member who is not exactly constructive in their conversation. But it's the leader's responsibility to manage those kinds of conversations and allowing people to do that in a way that's safe, but also lets them know this is what is expected is crucial for nonprofit success.
Right. Which is weird because I think that to me, those conversations are not conflicts, you know, they're just simply things that have to be maneuvered mm-hmm. through and around in the path of actually doing the leadership thing. To me, a conflict is my wife saying, no, I can't store my tuna casserole in the refrigerator.
I guess it's probably personal preference on how people define it, but I know a lot of people. I'm here in Minnesota where we believe in Minnesota nice and nobody wants to say a bad word about anything. So, it's something that, and that occurs everywhere. It's just not in Minnesota. But we really want to make sure that we are addressing those things that may make us feel uncomfortable, but are making other people uncomfortable in the spirit of advocacy.
Yeah. Teresa, we're out of time for this one episode. Can we circle back and do a second one about mindful leadership and
absolutely
things like that? So let's wrap this episode up. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm really enjoying this conversation.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, please, if you like what you're hearing, review us on Apple Podcasts, and please tell your friends about us and subscribe. We always value your feedback, which you can send to us at thenonprofitsnapcast.org. And we'll see you again in about a week.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.